Welcome to the Florescence Podcast, a show hosted by a 20-something-year-old. My name is Felicia Orr, and we will chat all about business, health, lifestyle, wealth, and just honestly navigating our 20s. So let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Florescence Podcast. I am doing another guest episode today, which is quite exciting because I said I wasn't going to do many this season, but people have been coming to me and wanting to speak on the podcast. So we're going to do it. So I would like to introduce you to Callum Armstrong, and he is going to chat to us about content marketing and how to make it evergreen. So before we get into the questions, Callum, I would just like you to tell me a little bit about yourself, what keeps you busy. It doesn't need to be fully related to work, because I personally believe we're more than just our work. So yeah, just share whatever comes to mind.
Cool. Well, firstly, thanks for having me on board here. Bit about myself. I run businesses, but my heart's in helping the environment. So I kind of find ways to bring those two together. As a skill set, I'm a marketer. So I coach businesses on how to get better results from their marketing and whatnot. But I actually got into business with a view to reforest the country. So I was backpacking around Southeast Asia in late 2017, and I discovered this plant called Manuka and the effects it has in bringing native forest back to the country. It creates canopy cover and brings invertebrates that attract pollinators and cleans our waterways, prevents erosion, all these really important things. So long story short, I started the skincare brand called Manuka Essentials. Create demand for native plant extracts and give landowners a reason to plant native forest on their land. While I was doing that, I was doing a bit of freelancing as a marketing, just like creating blogs and websites, that kind of thing. And that evolved into an agency that turned into a coaching business. And now I do that and basically run this charity that helps to create video content to tell the stories of people helping the environment.
Amazing. I love the evolution. Did you study marketing or environmental conservation?
Yeah, so I studied marketing. I got a Bachelor of Commerce in marketing way back. But I've just always lived in the forest. I've always lived in a house, to be fair. But, every opportunity I go for a hike or that kind of thing. I was as a Cub Scout growing up. Here's cool. Cub Scouts, and we always used to explore, and that kind of evolved into what are these trees around me and what are the birds and plants and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I'm not sure if you know, we definitely align on the whole environmental conservation front. My postgrad diploma was in environmental management. Yeah. And while I was doing that, I launched a business called Soul Family, which sold zero waste kits to help people like reduce their single-use plastic. That was a really fun journey, really good learning experience. I was 21 when I started it. We don't operate anymore. But I have a huge passion for the environment as well, and trying to figure out how to do business in a way that impacts positively for the earth. That's cool.
Oh, amazing. What were your top takeaways from Soul Family? Like, if you could share the lessons.
The main reason the drive to start it was I was learning so much while I was at uni, and I just wanted to be able to educate and inform people like right then and there. Like, I wanted to make an impact. I didn't want to wait until I finished like my course or whatever and then get a job and then get into the space. So it was really first and foremost around educating people. I thank my naivety being 21 to start a business, because that, like, without that I probably wouldn't have. I would have maybe got into analysis paralysis and then never launched the bloody thing. But I learned a lot. Did the whole like sourcing manufacturers and figuring out the supply chain by myself, and I always try to look at it as a learning opportunity for sure. So many lessons.
Nice. Awesome.
Cool. All right, let's get into the first question. So for those that are listening, they might not know what content marketing is, so we'll get you to quickly explain what that is.
Awesome. So no matter what you buy, you go through a series of stages in that process. You firstly, you're unaware that you have a problem, then you're aware that you've got a problem. then you find there's a solution that you could choose from, then you're ready to buy a solution. And before the internet, now with the internet, no matter how you consume it, there's information that needs to be transferred at each stage to move to the next stage of your buying process. So for example, if I am hungry and I don't feel like cooking, I might go and buy some takeaways, and that might just happen through chatting with my partner or my friends I'm around. If it's a higher involvement purchase, I might read blogs or watch YouTube videos or go on social media or go on Amazon or one of a million other ways to find our information online. And that's what content marketing is. Offline, we would do this through conversations. Online, it's simply turning that into media, turning it into anything from emails to downloads to blogs to posts to videos to podcasts to you name it. But at its core, there's that information transfer to help us solve a problem.
Mm-hmm. Cool. That was a really good explanation. And so you, over the course of your career, you said you had an agency. So did you used to help businesses with creating that content? And now are you more a coach and like a consulting aspect?
Yeah. So when I was running an agency, they'd outsource the whole content department, I guess you would call it. And that would be, you know, building your blogs, your lead magnets, your newsletters, your email automations, your socials, all that kind of stuff. And I just felt that in being a coach, I can build your capabilities as a client more so that then you have longer term outcomes. You can get the results, but you can also own the machine. And it's something, building capabilities is something I just really get joy out of. So the way that we look at, do you mind if I share how we kind of approach the content marketing from a coaching aspect?
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. So I like to think of it like going fishing. So if you want to go fishing, first you need to decide what kind of fish you want to catch. Where do they hang out? What lures or baits do they need? Or do you need a net or however that works? So finding your ideal customer, where do they hang out? What are their problems, their pain points? How do they talk about it? How does it make them feel when you solve their problem, etc.? And then you want to get the right equipment to catch the fish before you go fishing. Otherwise, that you're going to be trying to pull in a fish with your bare hands. Makes for a great YouTube video, right? So anyway, you might decide that you need a certain type of net with a certain type of holes, or that, you know, you need a particular type of lure or bait in a marketing context. That would be getting your website to be a no-brainer for your ideal customers, having a way of capturing leads that aren't ready to buy yet. That might be a lead magnet or a discount or some kind of reason for them to join your email list or subscribe and follow you. And then a way of nurturing them on autopilot so that those people that aren't ready to buy yet, you can warm them up. So that's like stage two. If you're fishing, you're getting your tackle and your equipment and your bait ready. If you're doing your marketing, it's like your net, I guess. And then the third stage is to go out fishing and try to, you know, if you're fishing, you might try different spots at different times with different bait. You might try different tactics. You know that the first way that you test your fishing probably isn't going to be the best way ever. So you continually learn and optimize and improve. And that's the same with your marketing. You don't really want to go out fishing until you've got a good net. And once you go fishing, then you want to test and improve. So the way that we do coaching is we first start with the first two stages, who's your ideal customer, and making sure that you've got that really good net to catch them. And then once that's in place, we go out and help you to create content, get it in front of your customers, and then just see what works and go from there. But it's all different for different people. Like blogs and SEO might be right for one company, the next might be more social media, the next might be on podcasts. So there's no one size fits all, really.
There is truly so much to the timeline of a customer if at first they're starting with their problem or whatever and then converting to a sale. I think a lot of business owners don't understand the importance of that nurturing. I do have a bit of a rogue question that isn't part of the questions we discussed. It comes back to something I thought while I was doing Soul Family. I always used to say, and I know it's wrong now, I always used to say, we don't have a target market or audience. We appeal to everyone. And I know that's not the case now. So I'd love to just quickly jump into that with you and for you to tell the listeners, like, why that statement like, it's going to hurt your business, it's going to hurt your marketing. You can't be everyone's target. So yeah, I'd love to quickly jump into that.
So I'm so glad you asked that question. I get this quite a lot, and over the years I've got it so often. People will quite often be like, well, we'll just take anyone who pays us money, or if they have a pulse, we'll sell to them. But it may be, if you were before the internet and you were in a small village and you were the local person that makes bread or whatever your profession is, great, you'll sell to anyone, right? But nowadays there's so much more noise out there, and you've got to cut through that noise. You know, anyone can reach anyone these days. And if you're not specific about why you're a no-brainer, people just get distracted, right? We've got such a short attention span these days. And the solution is not trying to reach everyone with everything. The solution is niching and narrowing down. And look, if you, they say it takes at least 7 touch points before someone's ready to buy. Obviously, if you're ready to buy something, you might just purchase. And other times, if you're not thinking about it, it might take a lot more than that. But if you don't have a consistent message, and that message isn't irresistible, you're kind of relying a lot on hope rather than on why we're the perfect fit for them. Would you rather be a really small, I'm going to come back to the fishing analogy, would you rather be a really tiny little guppy, tiny baby fish in the big ocean, or would you rather be a big fish in a small pond and jump to a bigger pond when you're ready?
I fully agree with you, and that's something I've learned throughout my marketing career and me just expanding my knowledge around marketing as well. I'm really glad we touched on that, because I feel like that's one of the main things when people start a brand. They want to know who they appeal to, but they just kind of, well, let's just do everyone. But that's not actually the case, and that's going to hurt your marketing in the long run. So thank you for answering that. Let's get back to the main topic, and we're going to chuck in another marketing jargon, and I'm going to get you to explain it. So with content marketing, you can make your content evergreen. So what does that mean?
So evergreen is where you create it once and it's still valuable and useful over time. If you look at in the forest, you've got deciduous trees like a kowhai, and it sheds its leaves over winter, and you've got evergreen trees like the rimu, which keep their leaves on, and they're able to photosynthesize all through winter. It's the same in business, right? If you create evergreen content, that content is going to keep getting results over time. An example would be if I'm selling cell phone accessories, a blog on the top cell phone brands and models of summer 2024 is going to be completely out of date by autumn 2024. Whereas if you had something like 10 questions to ask when deciding which type of cell phone to buy within your budget, that's something that's still going to be relevant in a few years' time if you get the questions right. I mean, maybe not with technology moving fast, but the whole point of evergreen is that if you're going to go to the effort of creating the content, you may as well make something that serves you over time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And does this mainly apply to digital channels? So like website and social media?
Yeah, I've never really thought of evergreen and offline channels, but you do have books. And if you look at books, that's an example of evergreen content that's offline and that can last for years and years. I mean, some of the best sellers, the people who wrote them aren't alive anymore. But then if you look at, say, a newspaper article that was talking about the events of yesterday, it's not really relevant once that day's over. So I guess it is offline, but I've never really thought of it that way.
Yeah, I would say for the most part it is in the online space. So you mentioned the example of a blog article. What would be some examples of evergreen content on social media platforms? Just because social media is so fast-paced, and I feel like a lot of businesses and creators are constantly turning over content. I have seen some creators repurpose old content. So would that fall under the bandwidth of being evergreen? Or
So that's a really good question. I think for the most part social media content is not evergreen. However, if you look at the short form videos like YouTube shorts that you can scroll through, I've seen stuff that I got engaged with a year ago that comes up now, and I'm like, well, this is still really good content. But in general, yeah, most social media posts, especially if you look at channels like X and Instagram, a lot of it isn't relevant. And especially Facebook, it isn't relevant much later. Like you said, people do repurpose the content, but there is another way of looking at social media content and how it can be evergreen, which is creating a really high quality piece of content once, say a blog or a download or a video, and then repurposing that over time so that, you know, you've put all the work in once, but you might get 10 social media posts out of that, and then you can always reuse it. But yeah, I'd say in general, social media tends to be a bit more faster paced, but there is a trade-off there, which is that if you're going to create something that's a big heavy lift that's evergreen, chances are it's not likely to have a huge uptake straight away. Whereas if you create a piece of social media content that is not so evergreen, but maybe it's topical and relevant at the time, that will likely have a much bigger spurt of attention and engagement and interest and potential sales up front, but not over time. So there's a place for all types of content. I think evergreen is an important part of your marketing, but if you only do evergreen, just know that it's going to take a bit longer to take off than if you're doing more topical, shorter form stuff.
I'd like to discuss something with you because I thought about this recently for myself from a personal perspective, and then I saw someone make a video about it. So I was a very late adopter to TikTok. It was just another app that I just really didn't want to be addicted to and scroll on. That lasted until maybe 2022. So I feel like it was pretty good when I feel like it was pumping since 2019. So I'm on TikTok now. I go on it, and I've been finding myself using TikTok as a search engine rather than Google. And then I saw someone make a video about it, that TikTok is a search engine, and there are obviously a lot of New Zealand creators, New Zealand brands now on TikTok. And so say I'm going to Auckland, like I could search up restaurants Auckland and TikTok, and then videos would pop up. So I'm thinking, with that kind of shift towards the younger generation wanting social proof through watching a TikTok video to be like, oh yeah, that food looks good in that video, I'm going to go to that restaurant when I go to Auckland. In a way, would that kind of be evergreen then?
Yeah, I guess so.
It's a very as long as, like,
they're not changing their menu every month.
Yeah.
I'll be honest here, I feel really old. I haven't got onto the TikTok bandwagon. but that's I've seen a lot of research and data around how the younger generation typically uses social media instead of search engines, and that's so interesting to hear. Yeah, I'd say, like, it, you know, as long as it's not looking at last season's menu, then definitely if that's being used to search. When I think about social media not being evergreen, I'm thinking about, you know, that typical Facebook post that you do and then it's like, oh, what was that, you know?
Yeah, or like in around sales and things like that, obviously that's got a short lifespan, and then you move on. But I just thought, it was quite interesting because I thought about it myself from a personal perspective, and I mean, I'm almost 27, so I'm not that young, you know, and I feel like if me as an almost 27 year old was starting to use TikTok in that way, then I'm guessing, like, people in their late teens, early 20s, that's probably how in the future they'll figure, like, look for recommendations and things like that.
Definitely. I think one thing, and this is just putting an idea out there, and I'm happy to be proven wrong, but one thing I think we're going to see more of is integrating of all these different search engines. So you search on Google and TikTok results come up. You know, you search on YouTube and that's been TikTok videos repurposed so that wherever you look, you're likely to get a lot more cross-pollination because they're all competing. Like, if you think about it from the perspective of TikTok or Google or YouTube, which is Google, I guess, they're all competing for your attention and they all want to sell advertising to your attention. So, you know, if for example, look at the short form video movement. TikTok started that and now every channel is using short form video, except for maybe LinkedIn, because it's it's what's happened. So yeah, I think we're going to see a lot more integration of these platforms, but I'll happily be proven wrong.
No, it'd be interesting to see. Coming back to the traditional form of evergreen content, if we have a business owner, agency, even a social media coordinator or marketing manager or whatever listening, and they want to figure out how to integrate more evergreen content into their strategy, what advice would you give them?
So here I'm going to differentiate between business to business and business to consumer. So if you're B2C, I'd say you're probably, it depends on the value of your item and who your audience is, but you're probably going to focus more on your YouTube videos and your blog. If you're business to business, it's probably more likely to be about your downloads to get people on the email list, your blog, and maybe podcasts. But either way, sorry, that's probably not the best advice. Taking it back a step, the key, I guess the underlying concept here is a concept called primary and secondary content. So decide what your main investment in content is. Is it your blog? Is it your newsletter? Is it your download lead magnet? Is it your YouTube channel? Put the effort and resource into making really good content that solves your ideal customers' problems in advance on that channel, and then repurpose that elsewhere. I think that'd be the main thing, is like you can spend a lot of time picking up little stones, but you're better off picking up the big rock and then using that rock to make the little stones. So then from your perspective, if you create the content once and then you repurpose it, it's a lot less effort. But if you look at it from your ideal customer's perspective, they find a short form piece of content on social media or on your newsletter or on in an advertisement, and then they go to your website and they see that in more depth, and then they purchase from you or they sign up to your emails and they get even more detail of that snippet. It's a much nicer journey because, you know, the reason why they actually gave you their attention is what they're going deeper on, rather than there's a topic like over here and then when they get to your website, there's a completely different topic over there. Does that kind of make sense?
Yes. Yeah, it does. I guess it is. There is a bit of jargon there, but yeah, that does make sense.
So I guess, yeah, it's really hard to break out jargon in marketing, isn't it? We seem to be speaking a weird language. We actually created this marketing jargon dictionary. It's like a blog with like 150 different or so different, like all the acronyms and what they mean.
Really cool.
Like, there's just way too much jargon.
Did you say you created that?
Yeah, so it's on our website. I'll send you the link afterwards.
Cool. Yeah, that would be awesome to see.
But I think just to summarize, like if you create different content for each channel and then it's different topics and it's different effort, it's a really heavy lift. But if you create one really good piece of content and then you use that across your channels, it's a lot less effort, but it's a much nicer experience for your customers. Mm-hmm. And it means that you can go deeper as well. And yeah, it kind of plants your flag in the sand as like where we have expertise in this particular topic.
Mm-hmm. Cool. The next question is probably moving a little bit more into your coaching space, I think. And so it's before a business invests in content, whether that's in-house or outsourced to an agency or whatever, what foundations does a business need to succeed?
So first things first, like we said earlier, you need to know who you're targeting. If you're going to put energy into the interwebs in terms of your time or your money or your content, you actually want to know who you're talking to, because otherwise there's a lot of noise without much signal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to cut through it. Secondly, I would make sure that your ideas are actually validated by what your customers need. It's really easy to get stuck in an echo chamber where you say, this is what we offer, therefore this is what we're going to sell, without actually validating, is this what our customers want? Or you might look at what your competitors are doing and say, okay, well, that gives us an idea. The best way is just to, even if you've done this for years, you're running your business, you know what your customers need, et cetera, just talk to some of them and see, confirm that your assumptions are correct before you put all that energy into promotion. And then I'd say, make sure that's reflected on your website. Make sure that your website is irresistible for your ideal customer. Because all that energy that goes into getting them to your website is lost if they just drop off when they land. And then go out and promote.
Love that. I feel like assumptions in any area of life or any business industry or whatever can be quite damaging. So I think that bit of advice, like, just go and ask who you think are your customers or who have bought from you before, or even friends and family, and just help, that will help validate your idea and then also give you feedback to pivot if you need to. That was actually one of the biggest lessons with Soul Family. I was just of the idea that I didn't want to share my business idea with anyone. I just wanted to keep it secret and to myself, and not out of a fear or embarrassment. I just wanted to keep it for myself, make it all perfect before we launch. Like, I just didn't really feel comfortable speaking about it with people until it was perfect, you know, which nothing ever is going to be. Like, the best way to launch is do your minimum viable product and then pivot if needed. But yeah, that was definitely a big lesson for me, because there wasn't a whole lot of market research that went into it, which market research can range from like conducting a full-blown investigation and surveys and from just even asking a few people to validate. But yeah, I like that advice to just get out there and ask people, and don't be scared and shy, and whatever feedback you get back will be helpful.
For sure. And you can always change. Like, there are some things you can't change. But most things you can go and adjust later. And I think this is just speaking from my experience. You might not have had the same experience, but I think as an entrepreneur starting early stage small company, it's really easy to feel like everyone's got their eyes on you, and to think that everyone's watching, and if you change something that everyone's going to judge you for it. But the truth is, like, we're all so busy like living our own lives that we barely even notice. There was a video I watched the other day, and they said there's two people that don't care about your content: your family and friends and your audience. It's like, we're all just thinking, what's in it for me, and what matters in this moment. Like, you know, if it doesn't work and it falls on deaf ears, then just try something else, you know. I've had things where I spent years planning it and then putting it out there, and it's like, oh, that didn't work. I could have figured that out 3 years ago, and damn it.
yeah that's true. And I think that that sentiment also applies to life. We're always so worried about what other people think of us, but at the end of the day, everyone only really cares about themselves, and they're only worrying about what they're doing for the most part. Sure. So I think definitely applies to many areas of life.
Yeah. And look, if you're like, I don't know, the royal family or Taylor Swift or someone that's got everyone watching them, that's probably not the right advice. But for the rest of us, like us normies, then that's just the way it is. Right?
Us commoners.
That's what is it, proletariats?
Yeah, cool. All right. So most evergreen content does generally sit on a business's website. So do you have any quick fire tips on how a business can improve the performance of their website?
Yes, I sure do. Thanks for asking. I've got 7 or 8 tips, depending on how far we get through them. First one is WIFM, a really great acronym. It stands for What's In It For Me. So I see so many websites out there that are just an online brochure, and it's all a sales pitch. It's like, we can do this. Here's why we're good. We got this testimonial for this customer. Here's our features. Buy from us in this way. Nobody cares about that. If they do, they're just being polite, or they're your mum, and they're always going to be your biggest supporter, right? So like, just answer what's in it for the customer. You know, here's what's in it for you. You get this. Here's your pain points. We'll solve your problem in this way. That's the first one, is just like, they're the ones that are paying you money and giving you their attention. So appeal to that and make it a no-brainer for them.
Cool.
Secondly is like speaking your client's tone of voice to their pain points. So for example, in our coaching program, when I was first launching this, this is like, I've done more than 20 iterations of our offer to get to this, but wow. At first it was like, build your marketing strategy and plan which sales channels you're going to go through, and improve, make your website look like it's nice and irresistible and publish some blogs and have the processes and systems in place. And that just fell flat on deaf ears. It's like, okay, that might be the deliverable. That might be what you're getting. That might be what I'm teaching you to do, because that matters. But like, it's not what people are buying. So now the way we talk about it is like, go from not knowing when your next customer will show up to owning a 24/7 customer getting machine that works in your sleep. If you're worried that like referrals are working but they're not predictable and you don't know how to do digital marketing and you're not confident investing into it without a guarantee of what's going to work, then you need to talk to us. It's the same product, it's the same service and offering, but I'm just talking to like, why, what are your pain points and what's the outcome that's your dream outcome? So I think it's really important, like you can say the same thing in two different ways. How does your customer actually think about it and talk about it? And that comes from interviewing them. On that note, if you like, I've got a free toolkit set of questions and how to conduct customer interviews, completely free. It's just a Google Doc. Do you want me to give you the link to that for anyone that
That would be cool. Yeah, and I can put it in the description of the episode.
Fantastic. Next up is above the fold content. So people will usually have about 5 to 10 seconds of attention that you've got to grab them before they just leave your website most of the time. Mm-hmm. So that first little bit of your screen that loads on a mobile or a computer, make sure that you've got the most valuable bits in the first blink of an eye, and then you can get into the rest of the details. Quite often I see businesses have their best message buried like 3/4 down the page and no one gets to it. Really important. Next up, make the journey obvious. How many times have you been on a website where there's like 5 different calls to action pointing to different things on the page? And it's like, well, what do you want me to do? Should I fill out the form or call you or download your lead magnet or join your newsletter? What to do? Like, why are they on this page and what's the next step? And that'll help to increase conversions, but it'll also just make it easier for your customer to find what they're looking for. Number 5, share customer love. If you've got testimonials, if you've got like logos of who you've worked with, if you've got case studies, like show them. People trust their peers more than they trust you. So just appeal to that and it'll, it'll make everything easier. Next up is consistent branding and consistent look and feel. So if you've got like 5 different colors, 5 different fonts, it can feel like a bit of a scrapbook, and it's best if, you know, if you've got branding in place, this probably doesn't apply to you, but if you haven't, then investing in a basic branding exercise can have a huge impact on the experience of your website and how people perceive you. Number 7 is optimize pages for search engines. So if you decide that you want to get traffic from Google and you want to get people clicking on your website, it's important to know what people are searching and to There's a lot of basic best practices I won't go through on this call because we'll be going for hours, but you can Google like basic SEO on page and it'll tell you, like putting in the titles and meta descriptions, all that kind of stuff. And then lastly, this point probably applies more to higher value and like business to business kind of stuff, but 3% of your audience in most markets is ready to buy right now. The other 97% aren't ready to buy. If you've just got a sales pitch on your site, you're relying on hope that the people that land on your site trust you enough to buy, they're ready to buy, they don't get distracted, they inquire and purchase. But that's a lot of hope to rely on for what is one of the most important things to finance your future. So offer some kind of value that people can take away if they're not ready to buy yet. Like, we call it a lead magnet in the marketing industry. It might be an ebook or a checklist or a template, or if you're a retail brand, a discount or some kind of seasonal usage calendar. And something that people I like to think would normally pay money for, but you give them for free as a piece of content, and they give you their email address and permission to contact them in exchange. Once they've got that, you can then send them emails and you can follow up. Look, you don't know when the next social platform is going to die or be born, or if you accidentally get booted off Instagram for whatever reason. But if you own the email list, then you always have contact with your audience as long as they use that email and want to hear from you. So that's like a really important part of making your life easier and your growth easier in the future. So yeah, cool. Those are the 8 tips to getting your website
work. Those are great. And I feel like super accessible for people to integrate quite quickly. Like, they don't need to go out and hire some big fancy website person to do it, you know, like with a bit of Googling and with the tips that you've given yourself. I feel like those will be really helpful for people. So thank you so much for sharing. Before we get into the last question, at the beginning you said you wanted to ask me a question. Is that something you want to be on air or after?
I just wanted to know, like, who are your ideal customers if they're listening to this, and at what point would they want to work with you?
Ooh, that's such a good question. I feel like it's interesting for me because I'm doing a few different facets of business now. My main one is my marketing agency, and generally the main service that I specialize in is creating the content. Most of this is for social media, a little bit for website, but I've just moved into the wedding space as well, wedding industry. It kind of rubbed off on me while I was prepping and planning for my own, and so I took my skills of creating content for businesses and brands, and I'm doing that for weddings, offering couples this option. Maybe they can't afford $4,000 for a really professional videographer, but they want some video content that they can go on to post on social media. So that's been quite a good gap in the market that I have found, and it's been received very well. But in terms of a target audience, I think that's something I'm still figuring out for both of them. I would say for my agency side of things, I definitely seem to get more inquiries from small businesses, one woman slash man bands. The startup world is a little bit like startup world on a larger scale is a little bit too much for me, and my business is very much a lifestyle business as well. Like, I want to scale and grow, but like balance is very important for me as well. So yeah, that's the marketing side of things. And then the wedding one, it's so fresh. I only launched it in January, so still trying to figure it out. But I think I'm trying to target couples that either they're at the very luxurious end of the spectrum and they've got a photographer, they've got a videographer, and they want a social media content creator. But I've found that most of my target audience seems to be the people that have a photographer, they've been able to budget for that, want video but can't afford the professional videographer. So
you would take like the photos and videos and then turn that into a bunch of posts so they can like share.
Yeah, so I take everything on my phone, my iPhone 14 Pro, and I supply them with all the raw images and videos, and then I also create some short form videos for them as well. I create a highlight film and then maybe a couple of other short videos that they can post to their social media. The lure with it is that now with photography, you will get sneak peeks within 48 hours, maybe 10 to 20 photos, depending on the photographer. But video, you're generally not going to see for at least 8 weeks. So with my service, you get everything within 24 hours, which is super cool, because then they can go and post and be like, we got married. It's been fun.
Awesome. And is that just for people locally in Manawatu, or do you get traveling?
For now, yes, but like, so happy to take inquiries from around New Zealand. The goal for me, like, I would love to travel if it's like a cool location like Queenstown. Like, yes, please, I'll go to Queenstown. But it would be cool to scale to a point where I have content creators around the country. Right. And they contract me and they're under my brand, which is something New Socials. But if I get an inquiry in Hamilton or Hawke's Bay or whatever, I can manage the client relationship and then introduce my content creator in that location, and then they would be the one physically there shooting.
Cool.
Yeah, that's a goal. But yeah,
hitting the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks for sharing.
Of course. Was there any other follow-up questions you had from my answer?
That was my full interrogation.
Just one question?
There's one question. I guess with your digital marketing, are there any channels that you focus on? Like any particular, are you more TikTok or Instagram, or do you kind of do the lot?
In terms of me promoting my agency or the content I create for clients?
For clients, yeah. I like to think, like if I hear of someone, or if, you know, if someone hears of someone, like who are they? Who are like the right people for you? If you were like, damn, that's like my ideal customer, or like they just want to be on this particular channel, or is it kind of that you just talk to them and see where they're at and figure it out together? Or
yeah, I would say if I had to pick two platforms, there would definitely be a focus on Instagram and Facebook. I do cross post most of the content that I create. I do cross post onto both platforms because it's easy to, and Facebook owns Instagram, so in terms of scheduling, it's super easy. TikTok is still quite daunting for me from a client perspective. It just, TikTok has changed so much since its inception, and I think everyone's still trying to figure out what works. I think authentic content will always reign supreme on the platform, and business owners, I feel like, that are getting into the digital marketing space, they've like just jumped onto Instagram, so like just getting them through that is one point, and then trying to get them onto TikTok is like a completely different ball game, even though it's the same kind of like short form video.
I feel like this is probably uninformed thoughts, but like I feel like TikTok's more focused on individual creators than like a brand, maybe, but I don't know, I could be wrong there.
Like it is, yes, but I've been seeing some excellent work from some brands. Are you aware of the agency The Attention Seeker? They're based in Auckland. They're a marketing agency. So they hired a girl who was in New Zealand, and she already like had her own following on TikTok, like personally, her own personal brand. And they've used her skills, her personality, her character to grow their business page. And now I've been seeing some other New Zealand brands, and I've been looking at their strategy and stuff, and I'm like, that's so interesting. It's very similar to The Attention Seeker. And I find out later that they are on LinkedIn, that they are the clients of Attention Seeker. And it's just very interesting, like some of the storylines that they come up with. I think TikTok is a space to be fun. One I saw the other week was, it was like a hair care company, like shampoos and things like that. I think it might have actually been Australian, but what they did is they got like the social media coordinator to do a challenge where every day she didn't wash her hair, her boss would give her $100, and she was like 30 days, and she would start each video with a pot on her head, which is like so super random, but you go on the video and you're like, why does this girl have a pot on her head? And then she explains it. She takes off and like, here's day 15. This is what my hair looks like. But yeah, people have been really into following those really random journeys. And obviously the success of it comes from the performance of the person. So in this case, it was a young girl who was a social media coordinator or whatever at the company. But yeah, I've just been watching from afar, like what people are doing in the TikTok space, and it's interesting, but it also, yeah, quite a big undertaking.
Actually, I've got a question for you, if you don't mind me asking. On that note, I've got a someone I work with. They built this huge like channel, and their staff member had created all this content and then got their channel, like their YouTube, being quite big and popular, and then left and became their competitor. And now they're like, oh no, our competitor's like on all of our most popular videos. And like, I feel like when you're getting a personality to do it, if it's not the owner of, even if it's the owner, because if they sell the business, they're tied to like the performance. Do you have any thoughts on like how you balance out getting that human factor without lining the pockets of your competition down the line, or not being able to exit your company?
Yeah, that's really rough. I think that is something we're all still learning, because people are creating this personable character around the brand, and they're bringing the face of the brand. Yeah, I'm not really sure if I have an answer for that. And I mean, we do see it in other industries, like real estate. Like when you change to another agency or whatever, like you're shunned, you know, like never speak to us again. Right. And I think that's on a much smaller level when you bring it into the world of social media, and you'll be like, hey, that's Sally from blah blah blah, now she has your own company. And yeah, I think there's definitely a danger there, because they've obviously fallen in love with her and or him or whatever, and that character, and wanting to support them. So if they do leave and go and do the exact same thing, then that is a bit of a worry. But I'm not really sure. I guess that would come back around to like non-compete clauses and things like that, but also maybe just a risk that businesses have to take, because at the end of the day, not everyone is going to stay at the business forever. I guess in that instance, maybe the owner would then give some buy-in, I don't know, to owning a bit of the company create more loyalty around the longevity. But that's a really interesting question, and I feel like we will probably see that being more of an issue going forward.
I feel like that's like, I don't feel like there's a good answer to it just yet. And one perspective, which I never considered until I had a chat with one of my designers who really opened the light on this, which is like, you might pay your artist, and don't get me wrong, a content creator is still an artist in a form, just like an illustrator or painter or a documentary guide is, right? And you might pay them for their time, but is still intellectual property of their brand and their face, right? And maybe it's just a perk of the job. Like David Attenborough, for example, spent how many decades with BBC, and BBC paid him and they owned all the documentaries, but he still gets called in to do documentaries with other people because people know his name. And is that, do you say, well, does BBC own the David Attenborough name because he was the artist that created, that was the face of those documentaries? Or is it that actually it's just the perk of the fact that if you're going to put your face out there and you're going to take the downsides of that, you also get the upside of owning your own brand and your own reputation from it? I don't know. Thinking out loud.
Yeah. I guess it can actually be transferred into traditional mediums like TV and celebrities and things like that. So, yeah, I haven't actually really thought about it until you brought it up, but I feel like I'm going to continue to ponder it.
Yeah, be journaling on it. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. All right. One more question, and I feel like you've answered this in bits and pieces throughout the episode, but let's round it off by you giving us a quick little summary about how you help people and where people can find out more to connect with you and learn about your services.
Cool. Thank you for asking. In my main business, Paste and Publish, I help B2B service businesses to get results from their online marketing. Firstly, coming back to the fishing analogy, getting their ideal customers focused on, getting messaging guidelines to target them right, getting that reflected on their website so they've got a better net to catch their fish, and then going out and going fishing. If you do solve problems for other businesses and you do need help, we have a coaching program called Evergreen Leads, which I'll send you the link for. Helpful with that. If you'd just like to have a chat about marketing, always down for a yarn. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. And then our charity is called the Reforestation Fund, which is going to be changing names soon, actually, but the reforestationfund.com. We help to share the stories of people helping the environment. I'm a firm believer in that we need to amplify the stories of conservation so that we can all understand more and take action. So if you're into like the conservation space, check out the Reforestation Fund. There'll be a big announcement in a few months on a new name, so it might not be relevant when this gets live. But anyway.
Won't be evergreen? What do you mean?
Oh, no, but we'll make sure to redirect. So if you go to that website, you'll see the new name.
Amazing. Sounds good. Well, you have your fingers in a lot of pies. It sounds like you're a very busy man and you have lots of passions, which is so cool. So yeah, I'd just like to say massive thank you for jumping on the podcast. I've had heaps of fun chatting about marketing with you. We don't usually dive too much into the business space, but I really enjoyed it. And I know there will be people that get a lot out of this. I do have quite a few listeners that are in the space of starting side hustles or might be in the marketing industry. So I think, they'll definitely be able to get something out of it. So thank you so much.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for having me, Felicia. It's really been a pleasure to get to know you and to chat about this stuff. And yeah, it's keep doing what you're doing because I love your vibe. It's really uplifting, and we need more positive, more less mixing your words, more positivity in this world. So, tops to you for that.
Give yourself a pat on the back if you made it this far in the episode, because you just invested in your future self. If you loved the episode, please share it far and wide with the people you love. And if you want to connect with me, you can get me at fluorescence.podcast on Instagram. Catch you in the next one.